Welcome to another edition of Radio Watson, the talk show where I discuss the latest happenings in pop culture and entertainment. My name is Buddy Watson, and today we are counting down our top 10 albums of 2021. And unlike Channel 7's Weekend Sunrise host Matt Doran, we've actually listened to the albums before we discuss them. So you may be asking, who is we, you ask? Well, it's none other than Simon Blackburn from the Music Discovery podcast, Take My Tone. Simon, how are you?
I'm very good. I wait all year looking forward to recording this, and I can't wait to get into it. And also, Channel 7, you suck.
Well, he did own up to that mistake, so his actual apology thing was quite good. So yeah, forgive and forget, and hopefully learn from there. And what we've learned is that music is good.
It is good.
Listen to a lot of it. Of course, you are of the Take My Tone podcast. Tell the people out there who don't know about Take My Tone. They probably should if you're listening to this podcast already.
Yeah, it's not like we've appeared on each other's episodes and podcasts many times or anything.
No.
But yeah, Take My Tone is basically a music discovery podcast, as Buddy had described it. And the idea, at least from the start, was for myself and a different guest. We each take a song. We give that song to the other person, and then we basically record our reactions and our thoughts, and ultimately asking the question whether we take their tone or not. Meaning, yeah, whether you feel like the song that they gave to you is something that you would go back to or put in a playlist. So yeah, definitely a lot of interesting conversations. Buddy's appeared on it multiple times, and unfortunately, over the last year or so, it has been on pause. But this episode, this cross-branding of Radio Watson and Take My Tone, marks the special return of the Take My Tone podcast.
That's right. And if you're listening over on the Radio Watson podcast feeds, you can also go over to Take My Tone, subscribe there as well, where we're actually sharing our playlists. So today we're discussing our top 10 albums of 2021. We've chosen one song from each album to kind of denominate and kind of give a feel of what each album's kind of about, and we've swapped each other's lists there. And so we did, like, instead of the usual one song swap on Take My Tone, we did a swap my playlist. It was kind of a bit rapid fire.
It was rapid fire,
swapping
20 songs,
10 songs each.
A tight hour, and it flowed really well, and it kind of made me interested for the playlist format moving forward. So something different for the show. Ooh. Perhaps.
Oh, interesting. There you go. Little peek into the future. If you like either of those podcasts, of course, they can be both found on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, or Good, Bad, and Ugly podcast fetching services as well. Without further ado, let's get into it, because we've got a few albums to speak about. 20 today, my top 10, and obviously Simon's top 10 as well. I think there's two albums that cross over and transcend all genres and into both playlists.
Yes.
And make the cut there. So I guess by default, they would be the shows, I guess, combined top two, but alas, we'll get into the albums in a minute. Before that, what did you make of 2021 in music overall? Were you happy?
I was very happy. I think six or seven months into the year, I just said how strong this year was for music, and the latter half certainly didn't let down for me anyway. I was actually quite in awe of just, like, for myself and the bands that I follow, like, the quality of work and how certain artists made use of downtime in terms of, you know, not being able to tour and things like that. And yeah, I mean, I can imagine it would be, if you were stuck inside, like, a bubble, and it's like a set amount of time, that's a different kind of pressure to where it's like this, they don't know how long it's going to go on for. So let's just remain positive and let's just, you know, dig in and figure out how to do things, particularly when it comes to recording. A lot of these bands, like, had to record, you know, around sort of like COVID restrictions, or could only have a certain amount of people in the studio at a time and things like that. And so the fact that there's all this kind of like hurdles to overcome, I feel like I can feel that come through some of the music, in terms of just like going above and beyond to release an album. So yeah, I was very happy.
Looking back at 2020's playlist that I made, I actually was able to make a 50 from 50 playlist instead of my just 20 from this year. So I definitely listened to more music last year. And just looking at the quality of the top 10/20, I feel like last year was probably a better year for music, probably from the artists that I liked and the albums that I enjoyed. But a couple of the albums that have been produced this year that feature in the top 10, I would say I like more and will probably have longer legs than anything from last year and will probably be up there with all-time listens or just more longevity to them. So
it's kind of a bit, take that bit for what you will. Maybe that was just me. Quantity somewhat.
Yeah, maybe. It's like maybe there are a bunch of eights and nines from last year, but now I've got like a couple of masterpieces and tens that I'm going to hold on to for a longer amount of time. So
exactly, yep.
Let's get into it first. We'll go into a little bit of honorable mentions. Do you have any honorable mentions that kind of just missed out on the top 10 at all?
I do. I've got a handful here. This sort of avant-garde electronic / progressive metal act, Genghis Tron, released an album called Dream Weapon. It's a band that I've been very familiar with, but hadn't actually actively listened to them until this year. And I feel like if I maybe spent more time with it could have stuck into the top 10 because it was definitely speaking to me. Love the experimentation and stuff on it. A sort of somewhat prog rock supergroup called Soen released the album Imperial. That was really solid work too. You had Light the Torch, which is Howard Jones, formerly from Killswitch Engage. His current band, You Will Be the Death of Me, was the album. That was really good too. New Zealand has this cool trio called Alien Weaponry. And they had an album called Tangaroa, and that was really cool because it's very, very primitive. It's very, very raw. Like, we're talking about, you know, we're so used to these big soundscapes and productions and, you know, like stuff that Bring Me the Horizon does and all that sort of thing. And this is like as raw as like someone just like chucked a mic into a room. And something about that really resonated with me. It's almost kind of tapping into kind of like some Sepultura sort of type vibes, but they're a cool sort of like up and coming band from New Zealand. And they embrace a lot of the Maori like language and lyric into the lyrics and stuff too. So it's definitely got its own flavor. I didn't even know that Billy Eilish's brother Phineas did his own stuff. I mean, obviously, I should have because he's like the backbone of that whole thing. And his album Optimist, I was really getting into it. I just need to spend more time with it, and I haven't. But definitely honorable mention there. And Under Oath returned with an album called Voyeurist. And I thought it was relatively solid too.
Very nice. Yeah, the Phineas album, I really need to get into a little bit more. I think the first three or four tracks I've kind of heard maybe more so than anything else on there, and they got quite a good a tone, pun intended, I guess. For me, the honorable mentions were London Grammar's California Soul, Holy Holy with Hello My Beautiful World, and then Clyro with her album Sling, which actually her song Omebia, I think it is, has one of my favorite lines of the year, which is, "But I show up to the party just to leave," which kind of just encapsulates being that antisocial butterfly. The two that just missed out on my 10 were Willow. Yes, to that Willow, Whip Your Hair Back and Forth with her album Lately, I Feel Everything. It is her fourth album, but also her first album that features pop punk and indie rock instead of her R&B kind of style. The album features Travis Barker, who features on three songs, Transparent Soul, which is the opener, Gaslight, which is the third song, and then a song later on down in the album, which is Grow, which also features the vocals of one Avril Lavigne. She's really doing the MGK thing. It's 11 tracks. It's only 26 minutes. It's just fast, loud, and in your face. Gaslight is one of my favorite songs from not just that album, but probably of the year as well. Mm-hmm. So don't sleep on Willow just because you see that name kind of and you associate it with the R&B and the young whip of your hair back and forth. The second one was Kacey Musgraves, Starcrossed, which is her fifth album, coming off the back of the success of Golden Hour, which won 4 Grammys, including Best Album and Best Country Album. And I think it was my favorite album of that year, if I go back to a few different playlists. Still a great album that was also critically well received. The first half is super strong, but felt like it fell off towards the end. It deals with the breakup and breakdown of her marriage and divorce. It's got this real cinematic movie score theme. Think of something like The Godfather. The standouts of the opening track and single that was released was Starcross, one of those really depressive lines is there. It's like giving back the house. And then like, there's a line that's like giving back your surname as well. It's just like anyone that's in any kind of relationship or formed any kind of heartbreak or any bond, you just feel like, oh, that kind of the air gets knocked out of you in that moment. Other standout tracks are Good Wife, Simple Times, and If This Was a Movie. And once again, has that kind of theme where it's more feels like a movie score and quite whimsical, but drenched in heartbreak as well. So,
was this year Casey Musgraves? Was this year the one where she did the live performance naked?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, okay. It's like
I won't Google
like
it.
Like an SNL type, like a whatever, one of the talk shows, and she's on the stool, you know, country style, and the guitar's like covering everything. But yeah, she's just straight up. And I'm pretty sure that was it. That was this year. I should quickly dial back. I made a bit of a stuff up. I said honorable mention for the Under Oath album Voyeurist, but it doesn't actually come out until January 14th. It's just they've released half the album, and that was the half that I listened to. Based on that, I would say honorable anyway. That save that for next year. So I, funnily enough, when we were sharing these playlists before we even get into them, I kind of like you were still assembling, locking in your top 10, and I sort of listened past it. So stuff like the Willow, like the Gaslight song, and particularly Casey Musgraves, and even London Grammar were three that I kind of like locked onto. And yeah, exactly. I know exactly what you mean when you're talking about the sort of film score style thing with that track that you had on there from that Casey album.
Yeah, it's like harp and instrumental orchestral. It's a bit of magic in it. All right, let's go into the 10. You can go first, Simon. Number 10, what do you got for us?
Well, just dialing back again.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Just before
we get into that. You wanted to go into maybe tracks that let us down this year, albums that might have let us down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to disappoint you by ruining the flow of the podcast episode, but
I completely forgot about it. I don't want to harp too much on disappointments of the year, but I guess it's something to bring up as well when you have that kind of anticipation from a favorite artist. Two of mine quickly were probably Lanny's latest album, GGBBXX. Lanny's first two albums, the self-titled one, then Malibu Nights, were quite good synth pop. There's nothing kind of really fantastic about it. It's just kind of a sound and thing that I kind of I jive with. Yeah, I don't know. The sound has kind of fallen off or evolved or changed and not really kind of embracing the kind of stuff that I like from them. So that's probably just more of a me problem as well. And then the other one was Lorde, her final return after being on hiatus for so long with her summery album Solar Power, and just didn't hit on any kind of level. The most bizarre thing about the Lorde album was seeing it sell in stores. They don't actually sell. She's selling a physical case with a digital download of the album and no CD in it.
Okay.
I think it's like an environmental thing, but it's just weird to put something on a shelf that looks like a CD that has no CD in it.
Is it the cost of a normal album?
Yes. Yeah, it's the cost of a normal album as well. From memory.
Okay, then. I guess she's trying to start something. But I could imagine that would be anything that's had a long hiatus. There's the expectation and that sort of thing. So it kind of doesn't surprise me that, I guess, like, I'm not that familiar with her work, but when you sort of say, it just didn't hit, that happens all too often with people that wait too long for a follow-up.
Big tone shift as well.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
Yeah, okay. So for me, a band that are absolutely at the top of their game and, like, really forged their own sound in their own corner of kind of like metal world. Architects, their album For Those That Wish to Exist, it feels like a turn into trying to cater a bit too much to the stadium, bring the horizon crowd. And they are kind of like fellow bands. They're both British and they're both kind of like, and they've guested on each other's stuff before and all that sort of thing. And they've been around for about the same time. But yeah, it just feels like they kind of pulled back on the kind of like technical edge and stuff that appealed more to me, and then just more trying to like pull it back and make it a bit more like industrial and hooky, that it just, I don't know, it doesn't feel like the true Architects. But I guess at the same time, they're probably just trying something different. But yeah, anyway, AFI, I feel like they released an album called Bodies, and I feel like after, so the last album I really loved by them was Burials, and they've released, this is like the second since then, and this was just boring as hell. And I just want to kind of like shake them up, be like, come on guys, like do get some of that, I don't know, stop trying to be like a 80s cross indie cross punk-ish thing and the synth stuff, and just kind of get back into like what made you so exciting. But I just feel like they're just going to be, for it, they've just hit a thing now, they're just going to be coasting. There's this mysterious act called Sleep Token. They're kind of like being described as gent pop. And they had an album called This Place Will Become Your Tomb. Zach Jackson from Well Played, shout outs. He really likes them, but I just can't jive with this. It feels like the heavy elements are not legitimate, and it's really just like an experimental pop act that's trying to throw in heaviness. It's not quite clicking for me. And then Fear Factory released an album called Aggression Continuum. It felt copy and paste to me. Nothing really exciting about it. And longtime fans would, you know, talk about how great it is when like Dino's in the band and stuff. But I feel like their best album is when the primary songwriter was not in the band. So I'm sorry, guys. Send all hate mail, not to me. But that, you know, finishes up the disappointments. Let's get into what we really love.
Davey Havok should actually come back to Dream Car, and we should get a second Dream Car album. That's what I want. But of course, I'm a big No Doubt fan, so...
Yeah, but I think that's the thing. Just quickly on that, I think that if he wants to channel the synthy 80s stuff, he does it best in Dream Car. And I don't want to force bands to do whatever, but like with AFI, they're best when they've got that, like they've got like the punk energy or the hardcore energy, yes, and stuff. It's just like it's melding into each other too much for me.
Agreed. Let's go, Simon. Number 10. Yes. Let's kick it off. What do you got?
I've got Billie Eilish, Happier Than Ever. Which we may or may not have, which we actually did review on Radio Watson. So please check out the feed. I really love that episode featuring Dylan from Explosion Network. Shout outs. It was my first full Billie album experience. I feel like it's a very intimate album. Due to the number of tracks, it probably suffers from a little bit of padding, but ultimately it's like a really great body of work, and it shows an enhanced cohesion between the siblings. And there's somewhat of a throwback to the older styles, feels very genuine. It's not forced. It still has like the Phineas style of like the very intricate style of production, but it's not like, hey, here I am doing a jazz track or whatever. It still has that Billie stamp on it. So yeah, for an entrance album for me, I was really happy with that. I was happier than ever with it. I feel so hurt, you got a lot of fucking nerve I don't deserve, so don't take it out on me. I'm out of sympathy for you. Maybe you should leave before I get too mean and take it out on you and your best friend too. I should have. Wouldn't be a podcast without Simon in the pun game. Yes.
Very good. Number 10 for me is Girl in Red with her debut album, If I Could Make It Go Quiet, 33 minutes, 11 tracks. She's 22-year-old. She's from Norway. Like I said before, it's her debut album. Indie, dream pop, bedroom pop, lo-fi. It was received quite well in Metacritic. Got a 77. Pitchfork gave it a 6.8 out of 10. I really liked it. It feels like scattered thoughts kind of blurted out. The subject matter deals with kind of mental health and relationship struggles. The standout track tracks for me are Serotonin, which kind of opens the album and talks about mood stabilizers and the litany of intrusive thoughts that someone might be dealing with that has mental issues that they're kind of facing with. It's kind of all over the shop. But for me, it's kind of all over the shop in a good way. And then the other tracks that I really liked were Body and Mind, Midnight Love, and Rue. Rue was the other kind of single, one of the... I think there was three singles it released off that album. So, yeah, I like it. It's got quite a good kind of well-received. I think it's...
Is this someone that you've known of before, or is it just a new thing that popped up?
No, it's something I saw on kind of Apple Music's kind of... I think I found the single Serotonin in like one of those lo-fi or bedroom pop, dream pop playlists. And then I kind of investigated more, saw it was in like Apple Future releases, listened to a few other singles and then kind of pre-added it. And then when the album came out, it was something I was kind of looking forward to. And then, yeah, it really hit for me. So I've kind of, I leave my dog at home in daytime and I put Triple J on, just have something on in the background. And I've heard, I don't listen to radio at all, but I've heard a few of her tracks on this, so I have a feeling that there might be a few entries that make Triple J's Hottest 100 when that kind of pops up this year. So
very cool.
Number 10, Girl in Red. I'm running low on serotonin, chemical imbalance got me twisting things, stabilized with medicine, there's no death to these feelings. Dig deep, can't hide from the corners of my mind. I'm terrified of what's inside. I get intrusive thoughts like cutting my hands off, like jumping in front of a bus. Simon.
Yes. Number 9.
What's your 9?
What's your 9? That's like, are we gonna like how we segue? Okay, so. Number 9, in the spirit of the album of the year, top albums of 2021 is Spirit Box with their album Eternal Blue, their debut album. This is a band that really fell into my lap. I had no idea that this was a long-awaited album, let alone a debut. Now, I say it's very much for fans of Architects, Bring Me the Horizon, etc., but it's at the same time, it's not, because it very much doesn't feel like a clone. I mean, first of all, they have a completely different vocalist. So it's Courtney LaPlante, formerly of I Wrestled a Bear Once. She has incredible vocal control. She has this really great like ethereal cleans, and then her like actual like pitched screams and stuff that she does is excellent control. Musically, it very much ticks that modern metalcore production. But what I really like is it's not too reliant on having like the digital like genty tones and stuff. So yeah, it was just one of those bands that popped up in a in like Metal Hammer, like my digital subscription, and I thought, oh yeah, cool, you know, the cover looks cool. I'll give it a go. And yeah, I really fell in love with it. So yeah, I can't wait to see what they do from now.
Another amazing female artist with great vocal range, where I've confused there for being two vocalists in the band when it's really just her doing both.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, Spirit Box, very good. Number 9 is Halsey, If I Can't Have Love, I Want Power, at 42 minutes, 13 tracks. Once again, it's her fourth album, which is kind of a reoccurring theme for a lot of the albums that kind of make my playlist. I think there's three or four that are their fourth album. This one's actually produced by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross of Nine Inch Nails. You definitely recognize that influence when listening to it. It's really alt-rock, pop-punk, grunge. I Am a Woman, Not a God. You can definitely hear the industrial elements in it with heavy bass and distorted guitars. I really think that it's the best stuff that Halsey has done. Usually, I feel that she is better in the songs where she's just a feature rather than on her own in her own albums. I very much think she's kind of broken away from that this release. That's awesome. This album is a concept album about the joys and horrors of pregnancy and childbirth. Halsey said it was very important to her that the cover art conveyed that sentiment of my journey over the past 6 months, the dichotomy of the Madonna and the whore, the idea that me as a sexual being and my body as a vessel and gift to my child are two concepts that can kind of coexist peacefully and powerful. It's got a cool cover art and very provocative one.
Exactly. So I saw that and I was like, what's this all about? And I was like, saw the pictures that kind of come with it and stuff. I was like, oh yeah, clearly she's had a child and stuff. And that's cool that she's put all that into essentially a concept for this album. That's great.
Standout tracks are Easier Than Lying, which has an absolutely awesome bass line that slaps. Lilith, You Asked For This. Honey, which I also just recently found out features drums from Dave Grohl. And of course, the single that was I Am Not a Woman and I'm a God, with that, which is, I guess those number of tracks that I like off the album are the more upbeat rock-like tracks where you can definitely feel that that industrial or pop punk kind of influence that's been littered through the album. So yeah, number 9 for me is Halsey.
Very cool. Just further proof showing that Trent Reznor is one of the very highly regarded across multiple genres and mediums as well. So I'm gonna do a film school here. I'm gonna do Night Shells here. I'm gonna produce for this for Halsey here, you know. That's cool.
Well, she actually said in one of her interviews that she wanted this to be more cinematic, and that was kind of tied into that getting Reznor as well.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, so I suppose we're down to number 8 now. And number 8 is an album that Buddy is all too familiar with, and it is Church's Screen Violence. Now,
never heard of it.
Speaking of firsts, because I had my first Billy album experience, and I had my first full Church's album experience. And the only reason that I'd gotten into it originally is because Buddy had sent me a link to the first single, and then he said, hey, we should review the album. And I was just like, I was into the single enough that I was like, yep, let's get into this album. And in the lead up to that, I'd gotten into some of their previous work. So yeah, my first full Church's album experience. I'm thrilled. This is my entry point. It is like synth pop perfection. It's dynamic, it's not stale, it's bright, and it's cold. And the most important part is it's covered in melancholy, which is just, that's going to appeal to me on every level. There's barely a dull moment, and I feel like their follow-up is going to be a heck of a task. And it's probably going to be... I'm just going to go with the assumption that it's not going to live up to this, just because we hold it on such a high pedestal.
Yeah. Oh God, I hope so. Good luck.
Yes.
My number 8 is Olivia Rodrigo with her debut album Sour at 34 minutes, 11 tracks. She's 18 years old. She is a Disney Channel alumni. She was named Time Entertainer of the Year for 2021. How about that for a title?
And should put her pressure on the cover instead.
She has been nominated for 7 Grammys, this album has, including the big 4 general categories. She's the second youngest to ever do this, behind one Billie Eilish from a couple of years ago from her debut. So it kind of shows you how impactful and how successful this album has been. Rodrigo's vision for the album's lyrics were to explore a variety of sour emotions that young women are often ashamed for, such as anger, jealousy, and sadness. Album title refers to the concept of awesome things in Rodrigo's life progressively going sour as she gets older, representing a specific slice of her life as a 17-year-old. So very cool. Very much an album that is dealing with not dealing. Features like subject matters like breakups, moving on, dealing with fame, unfair expectations, all that kind of stuff. I guess breakup is relationship things is the big through line. I really love the opener of Brutal and the acoustic guitar that builds to the chorus. Another awesome bass line, banger and rock energy of Good For You. This song is about seeing an ex thrive on social media and move on like nothing happened, putting on loud music and thrashing around in your bedroom in front of the mirror, singing into a hairbrush, and then crying yourself to sleep after you run out of energy. That's just, I guess, the best way I can describe that song. And then the other one I really like is Driver's License, which has got some really good piano in it, and then the bridge later on with the lyrics, "'Cause I Still Fucking Love You, Babe," and then a lot of harmonizing over the top as well. And the other two tracks I really dig are Happier and Traitor. So that is number 8 for me, Olivia Rodrigo with Sour. Cry and I don't stick up for myself. I'm anxious and nothing can help. And I wish I'd done this before. And I wish people liked me more. All I did was try my best. Brutal out here.
You know, spoiler alert for the Take My Playlist episode that we've done, which, yeah, you can check out, of course. Supplementary content. And yeah, I really enjoyed that song. And so for me, if that was just if that was a taste of it, I'm actually really keen to check out this album. Okay, so moving on to 7, or should I say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, because we've gone to Oui Oui France with Gojira and their album Fortitude. So Gojira have gone from strength to strength. They're France's big success story in heavy music. I love that they've never dropped into digitization of modern metal. It's still very authentically organic and spiritual is their real vibe. Whilst trying some new twists, it's very strong songwriting, great technical skill as always. What was cool about this is, like, from the cover art to the videos and the fundraising efforts, all pushed towards, like, preserving and protecting the Amazon forest. So there was, like, a very environmentally centric mindset, which is kind of like their thing, you know. They're very much synonymous with Sea Shepherd and things like that. But this was cool that it was very specific to Amazon forest. Speaking at number 7, and you're thinking, Simon, you wear your Gojira shirt all the time. Why should it be higher? Well, it would have been higher, but I do feel like the vocal reverb and how lower down the vocals were mixed was a little bit heavy-handed, so it's missing some vocal presence compared to previous work, but aside from that, a real winner for me.
Number 7 for me is Japanese Breakfast with the album Jubilee at 36 minutes, 10 tracks. This is her third album. It's very much like an alternative indie pop. This album is a bit different to her previous outings, where they've been much more sad and melancholy and depressive type subject matter. This is more of an upbeat summer album, I guess, filled with joy. She describes it as an album of joy. So it reminds me a little bit sonically of Bjork, and it's the Oh So Quiet without her outrageous vocal screaming and lyrical range. I guess it's more on the side of the orchestral stuff and how that's kind of organized throughout the album as well. Standout tracks for me are the opener Paprika, Be Sweet, and then the other one that is that I realized I probably put the wrong song in the playlist, and I should have gave you a different one instead of Be Sweet, because my on re-listen, Posing in Bondage is probably my favorite from this album. It's got some really awesome heavy bass and instrumental, and there's backup vocals over the top in the back end, and then there's like softer, shorter one-word delivery of lyrics across the song, whining horns, It's really good. And I also like the sadness of Posing for Cars, which is the closing track, and then it kind of, towards the end, explodes into this like piercing guitar solo. Yeah, Japanese Breakfast. Quite a busy year for her. I think she also did the soundtrack for the game Sable.
Okay.
So,
interesting. Yeah. I mean,
very good.
So first of all, you said you felt like you gave me the wrong song, but Be Sweet, spoiler alert, I really liked anyway, so that's fine.
Mm.
That worked out for you. But we also missed the ultimate segue just before, because Gojira is Japanese for Godzilla. So we could have like transitioned. I should have known that you were coming out for Japanese Breakfast. Cosmos. Proximity. Number six is one of my all-time favorite bands, Chevelle, with their album Neuratis, which stands for Nothing Is Real, All This Is a Simulation. They're a very consistent band, basically, and I'm kind of glad that they sort of pushed back to like a concept album type thing, just because I feel like then it becomes a bit more paint by numbers if you don't. That was a bit of a surprise curveball, and the whole thing is like, concept of it is tapping into simulation theory and cross-dimensional travel, and with stuff like the release of Matrix Resurrections and things like that, this all very much lines up. It's a much more dynamic album than the previous one, but has the same punchy Joe Barisi production, and I was very happy. It would easily sit in my top four Chevelle releases, and this being their ninth album, so that's a good sign.
Number six for me is Brockhampton, Roadrunner, New Light, New Machine, 46 minutes, 13 tracks. It's their sixth album, which seems like a lot for such a young band that's been around for maybe, 2022, maybe five years. But they did release a trilogy of albums in 2017.
Damn.
They are a hip-hop boy band, even though, you know, they're trying to kind of escape that boy band branding because of the negative connotations that do come with it, even though they have that sound that kind of blends with hip hop.
Just to hit pause on that, how did that all happen? Like what makes them a hip hop boy band, as in they're just a hip hop group, but they have boy band aesthetic? Or
I can't even tell you offhand how many members of Brockhampton there are. There's like plus 10, at least 10 to 15. Oh my god.
So they're like the what's the big K-pop group that do the McDonald's promo and stuff. Anyway, yeah, like that, but there's like heaps of members. Yeah,
BT something.
BTS. That's it. Yeah,
BTS. Yeah, I was gonna see BTA wrestling. But yeah, they're just a collection of creatives that have kind of come together, and So some of their criticisms in the past have been that they've been having like too many verses and trying to get too many people on the tracks and having too many different sounds like that. Bye. And guest appearance, Simon's daughter. Fantastic. I wonder what her album of the year is. Brockhampton?
Probably. She always wants me to play either... She wildly swings between Katy Perry or Black Betty by Spiderbait.
Oh, Black Betty, damn.
Or Blue by Eiffel 65. So I'm all around the place.
Oh, man. Have fun with that in the car.
So good.
That's great. I guess if you listen to some of the other tracks or Sugar from their previous album, which I think is the one that kind of propelled them more into the mainstream, even though they were quite popular before that, but they actually did a remix with Dua Lipa for that song, you might hear more of those kind of more falsetto voices in the mm-hmm. chorus instead of just the bombastic old school style hip hop or R&B that they kind of have sonically, jumping from kind of different sounds here and there. So they definitely do have that, and they had that little bit on here as well. The standouts for me were the opener with Buzzcut featuring Danny Brown, Count On Me with its hypnotic use of the whistling and upbeat Ride Together chorus, also The Light I really like with its screeching guitar opener, and the lyrics about Joba's father's suicide, which are quite full on. I also like I'll Take You On, which encapsulates that boy band sound and vocals and sound. What's the Occasion and the sprinkling of guitar, it teases up until it dominates into a solo that ends the song. And of course, towards the back end of the album, I also like The Light part too. So yeah, definitely another genre bending mismatch band. That's producing good stuff at the moment.
I can't actually tell how many members there are because I've just looked them up, and some have like six,
like 15
people, and some have like 15. And I'm like, do people just? Some of them have like an entire class, almost like 20 people in this photo here.
I think the best way to think about it
is there like core like members 88... and then like friends.
Yeah, if you think about it, like 88 Rising, maybe the collection of. Asian artists, kind of like Joji,
Rich
Brian, Nikki.
So it's like more this of massive a collective
of creatives yep. coming under that brand and that label.
Interesting. So. That's, yeah, something I'm very unfamiliar with.
So I think like Kevin Abstract is one of the big artists from Brockhampton, kind of going off and doing his own stuff as well. I think they've said that they're only was going to do two more albums, one of which was going to be this. And then one more release that was supposed to be in 2021, but it didn't happen. There were deluxe versions of this album, so maybe that'll come next year. But that was kind of all they were planning as like a Brockhampton project as well. So okay. Whether that remains to be seen or is true or not, we'll find out in the future. Little pieces all add up to nothing. Swim within my bed sheets. It's something like a celebration. What's the occasion? I stay running from something I can't see. True colors blinding, fuck away from me. Okay, speaking of finding out in the future, you can find out what my number five is right now because it is Ginger with their fourth album, Wallflowers. So, yeah, this one straight off the bat is has better song structures compared to the previous album, Macro. It is a very pissed off album, despite the singular song that I gave you on the Take My Playlist episode. But what I love about that is it makes the softer melodic parts stand out more, like the song Wallflower. They're just a very prolific band. They're making big waves in the metal scene. Tatiana as a vocalist is just absolutely incredible, and I'm glad that this, while being somewhat of a newer fan, I mean, we kicked off Take My Tone with episode 2 with Ginger anyway, so I've been a fan since before that, but that was already, you know, two albums in sort of thing, and so they still feel new to me, and so I'm glad that that kind of like that love and that connection for it hasn't waned or anything. So yeah, solidly sitting at number five, and I actually just listened to it again today. I was thinking like, oh, maybe I could have pushed up to four, but no, this is locked in. This top 10's been locked in. Seems like they are evolving quite well and blossoming into one of your favorite bands.
Yes.
Number five, Lil Nas X, Montero, 41 minutes, 15 tracks, debut album, but was anyone really surprised at how much this was going to hit and how successful this was going to be with the amount of hype that Lil Nas X has had? He's a rapper and singer and a genre definer, kind of like Brockhampton as well. LGBTQ plus icon, came out on the last day of Pride Month. It's either earlier this year or last year, and kind of mocked people to a degree in saying like, "What, you didn't already know? Didn't I leave enough clues in this song from my EP or the album of album kind of art for here?"
Aesthetic.
He's a marketing genius with his use of TikToks, memes. He really knows his audience, responding and feeding off of social media backlash only kind of seems to help grow him as an artist, as a person. The provocative film clips with Montero, Call Me By Your Name, with the animation, the biblical themes, the lap dancing of the devil in knee-high boots, and then taking the horns and kind of becoming the new devil. The photo shoot with the fake baby bump announcing the due date of the album, and a lot of trolls coming out like saying you're ugly, and him replying like, you think that's not nice to say a pregnant person is ugly, and then and coming out with this, and then like, I'm gonna have to log off of social media now, it's not good for the health of me or my baby, which is just hilarious. So a lot of conservatives coming for him left, right, and center, mostly from the right, I'm guessing. But yeah, just crazy, just breaking a lot of Spotify records with Old Town Road, I think it was at the time, and just a lot of country people kind of trying to denounce him and push him away and not claim him, obviously due to him kind of pop country and his sound, and then of course him coming out as well and kind of breaking down those boundaries. Standouts from the album are Montero, Call Me By Your Name, Industry Baby featuring Jack Harlow, which is really cool. It's about taking down people that are really calling him a one-hit wonder or kind of death riding his career, and even more so since he's kind of owns who he is and his personality. It's really an anthem that is kind of like a takedown of the haters. I really love the acoustic guitar backing of the song That's What I Want, and that has another really provocative Brokeback Mountain-esque film clip that is quite good. And that kind of the theme behind that is that just whether it's, you know, you're gay, straight, bi, whatever, everybody at some point is just looking for love, and why can't we just have that without all the haters. I love the emo pop of Lost in the Citadel later on in the album, and I also love the closing track Am I Dreaming, which features Miley Cyrus and is a really an introspective, slower acoustic track, and this chorus in that track, Oh Never Forget Me, and everything I've done with them both singing in tandem is just really cool. So Lil Nas X is awesome. They're just gonna dominate from here on out.
So with that all into account, I'm probably going to floor you with this. So, first of all, I didn't know that Old Town Road was his song. I've never heard Old Town Road. I know everyone goes on about it, but I've never listened to it.
I hated that song.
I just assumed it was Billy Ray Cyrus. Like, it was just a song that he did.
It is.
But it's like, it says Lil Nas X featuring Billy Ray Cyrus.
There's been a ton of remixes done, and he's kind of like, that was, like I said before, part of his marketing genius, going to TikTok and doing TikTok challenges, like who does the best pole dance to Montero, or who's got the coolest remixes of my song, and then like sharing them and exploding it. Like,
so it also says, so how many albums has Lil Nas X done? Or this is
the first one.
So this is the first one. Okay. All right. Yeah, cool.
And then he did an EP that was before this, which was Closure.
Okay. So he built the hype through all the social activity. So then by the
That's
time
right,
it drops.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it would be an awesome like case study to do if I was still like studying and doing my marketing. This would definitely be the type of thing that I want to look into a bit more.
Oh, definitely. I'd love to see I love myself a good music documentary, so it'd be cool to see something like that. Then also, did he end up getting the enough tweets or likes or whatever to release the uncensored video clip?
I think he deleted it. He deleted it just as it got close.
Oh man. Shout out to Karen from Well Played. I know he was particularly wanting to.
We were all begging for it. Don't worry.
Oh, definitely. Cool. So there you go. It's just funny, like, to me, where it's like, I hear, and obviously the whole like naming with like Lil and stuff like that is something obviously very much associated with hip hop and rap and stuff. And it's something that I'm very much separated from. And then when it's like, I know the rapper Nas, and so I'm thinking like, is this meant to be some relation to Nas? Like what's the X? Like, how does, do you know what I mean? And it's so, all these things that happen are so kind of foreign to me. So I had so many questions going into it, being like, is he somehow related to this other act, or like what's going on? Or like, is there copyright over naming? Like, I just, yeah, I'm not sure. Anyway, it's a new, hey, you know, maybe I'll do all my research, and then, you know, this time next year I'll have Lil Nas X in my top 10. Alone, and I'm not forgiven, love away, but I want someone to love me. I need someone to need me. Cause it don't feel right when it's late at night. It's just me and my dreams. So I want someone to love. That's what I fucking want. Look, you know it's hard to. Okay. Moving along, number 4, 12 Foot Ninja with Vengeance. So they're definitely a band, Australian band, known for their brand of genre hopping kind of madness, primarily underlined by sort of like genty groovy riffs. Each album they've evolved, and this one definitely pushes more into the electronic and funk pop sort of territories. It's, as you expect, it's wacky, it's hooky, it's ultimately very groove laden. Whilst throwing in some, you know, some pretty cool new surprises, one of the standouts for me is the song that they did with Tatiana from the aforementioned Ginger, and I just love that. It's almost like a duet. It's just like the male and female vocal all throughout. So yeah, big ticks from me. And I think they did it at the right time as well, because it's kind of like, like acts from the early 90s, like your Mr. Bungle and things like that, that are known for like smashing all this stuff together. It very much kind of like borrowed or very heavily influenced from that vein, like just the band in general. And so I'm glad that they were kind of like able to sort of just moving out of like the, okay, jump from this selection of five genres into other areas. And then kind of like the songwriting becomes a bit more cohesive. So, yeah, that's number 4 for me.
Yeah, ever since you've introduced me, well, I already knew who 12 Ninja was, but since you gave me that song for the Take My Playlist, I have gone back and listened to other tracks off that album, and I'm really digging it. Cool. As well. I love that funky vibe. The bass is just, whew, so good. Thank you for great service. I feel so relieved. Guaranteed I'm up to buy a gun and be offended. Else is so good, it's number 4. It's Billie Eilish, Happier Than Ever, 56 minutes, 16 tracks. It also featured earlier on, if you've been paying attention, at number 10 for Simon's List. It's her second album. It's the follow-up to When We All Fall Asleep. Where do we go? We don't go anywhere. We just stay in bed, Billie. I don't know what you're talking about there. Which she won 5 Grammys for, including the Big Four. And I think this only the second artist to ever take out all 4. It was some country artist, I think, that took out all 4 before as well. Can't remember. The
probably Garth the Brooks there. Or something.
No, I would have remembered that one. what a tough act to follow, but the album is just really so good. Like you said before, Simon, it is a bit of a tone shift from her bass heavy electro trap debut, melding different genres of like jazz and that kind of bossa nova from the Billie bossa nova songs and slower, softer kind of soft pop or slow tempo ballad type stuff, still with a little bit of like touches of electro, that kind of her signature sound that you said before about Phineas being involved and having his kind of fingerprints all over it. It was number 1 in the US, UK and Australia, and lived up to the hype massively for me. all are pretty much standouts. Yeah, it was a bit long with 16 tracks, like you said, poor bit of padding, but I love Billy Bossa Nova. I love Your Power, which is, of course, one of the singles, which is an acoustic track, and which Billy said was not about a specific person, but a much wider problem that hundreds of thousands of millions have experienced. I really dig that track. Love the line, "Will you only feel bad if it turns out that they kill your contract? Will you only feel bad when they find out?" Also love My Future, which is one of the singles. Love the raindrops in the beginning of the song when it's all sadness, and then it drops out to jazzy guitars and positive outlook to the future, and then embracing it. Has a really sick film clip too, which is animated and mirrors the first and second half, highlighting the theme of looking into the mirrors and self-reflection and all that. But yeah, Billie Eilish, Happier Than Ever. Really good follow-up. Makes me want to take a picture, make a movie with you that we'd have to hide. You better lock your phone and look at me when you're alone. Won't take a lot to get you gone. I'm sorry if it's torture though. I know it might be more of an obsession.
We're moving along to number three, and this one for me is Trivium with In the Court of the Dragon. And you're probably thinking, Simon, I've listened to the previous year's top 10 albums, and Trivium was on that list too. How could this possibly happen? Well, yes, they did take out Album of the Year last year for me. They were number one, but that was released in early 2020, whereas this one was late 2021, and that's still sooner than I expected and sooner than I often receive from, like, bands in the metal genre and stuff. But as I said, people have made great use of their time during not touring. And for anyone particularly that is around with the Twitch business and stuff, they'd very much recognize Matt Hafey from Trivium. He's like the face of music for Twitch, and he's on there all the time. So this may be arguably maybe their best, but I haven't decided yet. It's technically proficient, it's proggy, it's powerful, it's dynamic, but it's backed by their strengths in songwriting that they kind of gained along the way, because this is like their 10th album or something. Like, it's crazy. So as I said before, Matt Hafey with the Twitch thing, he's a singer guitarist. He's easily one of the most regimented and disciplined vocalists in metal. Like, you can watch his vocal warm-ups and everything, and he's all just like, I do jujitsu at this time, and I do vocal warm-ups for this many hours at this time, and then I do, like, it's it's nuts. He actually did a live collab with Mike Shinoda over Twitch, which was also really cool to see. They just made up a song together, but yeah, it's one of those things where I'm just like, whoa, guys, like, slow. Like, I'm not used to people dropping stuff so quickly. Like, it's not my thing, you know. People might be used to, yo, this guy's got a mixtape here and here, and or Brockhampton with a trilogy of albums or whatever, and I'm just like, I've very much been more the, you know, yeah, like you take your time and you don't just throw it all out there and that sort of thing. But that's just how I've been to this point. But hey, you know, if people want to dig deep and release great stuff like this with their time off, so be it.
Maybe they need more members, they'll release more music. A band that doesn't have too many members, I think only three, is my number three. This is Rufus Du Sol with their album Surrender, 53 minutes, 11 tracks. This is also another artist's fourth album on my list. And this is an Aussie entry. They're from Sydney, even though they're based in LA. Oh,
did not know.
They actually got this album to number one in the Australian countdown, which I don't check any of that stuff really, or know what's playing on the radio. So that was awesome to hear. Even though I listened to 1,000 times at work, I didn't realize how maybe popular it was. So I'm guessing a few tracks might pop up in Triple J's Hottest 100 once again. Electronic, easy to listen to from start to finish. You can isolate a few singles or individual tracks here or there, but I think it's best listened to as a whole. It definitely is a journey, almost cinematic in how soft and wispy the vocals are as they build over like these entrancing beats and synths that's kind of slowly swell and then eventually erupt. The standout tracks are I Don't Want to Leave, just the simplicity of repeated lyrics that are emotive and delivered organically. I think you can't go past it if kind of executed right. And then Alive, Next to Me, Surrender, and then Always. The best way to describe Rufus Du Sol, if you haven't heard them before, I think the first album they did was Bloom, which has a number of bangers on. You should definitely check that out. It's kind of head-bopping, upbeat, emotive, sad music.
What a juxtaposition. But powerful. Yes, yeah, no, definitely. And I haven't listened beyond the one song from the Take My Playlist episode yet, but I was sold on that straight away, so... And a cool little fact, again, being like originally from Sydney and stuff. So, yeah, very cool. I'm keen because there's something about it. It's like I recognize the name and I recognize like the style of artwork.
They used to be just Rufus, and then they had to change their name because a band in America was going by Rufus or something like that. So now they're Rufus Du Sol,
of course,
or recognized as that in a different country. But I think they've just changed it completely.
Should have just been Rufus Down Under.
If it's turned out to, yeah.
Very cool, very cool. Okay, we're getting to the nitty-gritty. We're getting to the end. Number two for me is Times of Grace, Songs of Loss and Separation. My first thing is note, not Breaking Benjamin. Okay, that's going to make sense if you listen to the Take My Playlist episode. But just a bit of a description on this. This is, so the original singer from Killswitch Engage, who left and then came back, Jesse Leach. This is his band with the... guitarist and producer from Killswitch, Adam D. It's an extremely honest album. It's very like soul-bearing songs. And this, the reason that it like resonates so much with me is just from knowing that the personal experiences that they wrote this constructed this album from, between the two, because it is still a duo. They've got like a full band. Personal experiences with crippling back surgery, depression, alcoholism, divorce. They both went through divorce and just working through it. Hence the album title, Songs of Loss and Separation. The cool thing about this project too is you're thinking, well, okay, it's two core members of Killswitch. Is it going to sound the same? Well, no, this one, they push even further into that bluesy rock and kind of dark country sounds amidst the sort of heavy rock and metalcore foundation that it's built from. So, yeah, I mean, this came out early in the year. I was going to call it my album of the year back then. But one came in later and trumped it. I need these demons to be So before I even mention my number one, what is your number two?
Well, similar story. Number two, this is an album I really hadn't given any attention to up until kind of the last 3 to 4 weeks and listening to a few albums from lists that I kind of missed. And one of those was this, Turnstile, with the album Glow On, 34 minutes, 15 tracks. Immediately hooked from the get-go. Listened to the first track. I was just going to like kind of cherry pick a few tracks and listen to it and whether it was my vibe or not and kind of get an idea of whether I was going to pursue this and see whether it would make my list. And I listened to it straight away, start to finish, and then threw it back on repeat immediately after. That's how much I was obsessed with this. At one point I was thinking, could this dethrone the album of the year for me that I've listened to so much, like at least 30, 40 times this year, maybe even more. But it didn't. but it was close. And it made me think, could it? So that's the power of it. It's their third album from the hardcore punk band. They're from Maryland, Baltimore. It is an absolute genre kaleidoscope. They're hardcore punk, punk rock, alt rock, melodic hardcore, and Simon described them as dream punk.
Courtesy of Fantano.
Courtesy of, yeah, the needle drop, Anthony Fantano. Yes. On Metacritic, it's got a 92 of Pitchfork. It's 8.4 out of 10. Pitchfork, it was their sixth on their best 50 albums of the year. This has got Tony Hawk soundtrack screaming all over it. Reminds me of the best parts of 311 without kind of the over-reliance on reggae and the record scratching. Shout-outs to a punk band that can include a killer cowbell solo in the song Blackout.
More cowbell.
And then that song... Yeah, cowbell... More. Then that song completely shifts sound in the second half. You never really have time to kind of settle or breathe. And that I say that in a good way. It's overstimulation at its best. Underwater Boy is funky and features a bossa nova lo-fi indie portion that you would usually hear from a dream pop song that was manufactured from some pre-20-something bedroom. Cuco, one of my favorite Latin artists, comes to mind. Alien Love Call later on that features Blood Orange is a slow ballad bass-driven jam. Parts of this album are really raw without feeling cheap, dirty, or lacking of polish. Fly Again is another standout, just hard, repetitive, loud with a killer guitar solo, but a catchy sing-along chorus, and Mystery that opens the album with its spacey opening. Kind of has a little violent Soho like Scounding Rock, and then later on, New Heart Design sounds like it came straight from the 80s. I just keep listening to this album on repeat, and I think it's an album I will continue to go to long forward in next year or the years after. I think it's going to stay with me for quite some time. It's just, there's just something about it.
It's so interesting that it just like flew in like that for you as well.
Nothing like that ever happens when I'm usually doing these lists. It's like, I pretty much covered everything I wanted to this year, but somehow I just missed this. So
you could say it was kind of like the safety car, the RBW safety car, off your top 10, like it just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, there was like no chance of anything entering my list, and then Latifi crashes and boom, we have a new world champion.
That's it. No, very cool. I've still only sat with the one song that you introduced me to, but I know at least through a lot of like rock and metal and punk media, these guys made a big impression. So I'm very keen to get onto it. I've seen a couple of live performances on some of those like late night shows. And that was really cool.
I've watched those recently, actually, the few tracks that did. And they didn't just do one song on like late night. They did like a myriad, like two or three in a row. It was wild.
It was just cool to see as well, like just the aesthetic and everything. And also the fact that, yeah, this is clearly is a very important album for them, because they've gone from like, yeah, this traditional kind of like New York style of hardcore into like, let's just push into this experimentation and bring in the dreaminess. So that would actually kind of be the question as to what is their next album going to be like. Is this a thing where they're like, oh, we've kind of found our sound, or is it like a let's do something else next time, which can be a big weight on a band's shoulders when they've made such an impact like this. Yeah.
Simon, your number one.
My number one is Mastodon with Hushed and Grim. And it's technically a double album, so I don't know. I mean, that still sits within the rules. But this was a surprise release. I didn't even know they were working on material, let alone an 86-minute piece. Until this, I'd held Mastodon's art rock masterpiece, Crack the Sky, as my favorite. And this just surpasses that. And that is like... That is, to me, that's very rare. for you to have like a pivotal album that you just always come back to, and then for, I mean, you could say, I mean, no, that hasn't really happened in this case, but let's just say, like, you know, when Linkin Park released A Thousand Suns, and it has like had just all that time after, it's just like, wow, this really topples some of those like initial releases. And so I was very surprised about that. They're very much pushing further into their multi-vocal approach. It's used very well. Their drummer, Bran, has almost become the lead vocalist on this. Like, I love his 70s style mid to high register. It's very much offset by the traditional bellowing from Troy that they'd expect from Mastodon. What I do like, though, is that the guitarist, Brent, who has definitely sung a lot more on previous albums, he's taken a back seat vocally. He does appear in a few sections, but I think that was smart because I feel like his vocal was more of an acquired taste, and I just kind of preferred the other two guys. But ultimately, what sells Hushed and Grim to me is just this sadness running through. As I said, with Scream Violence and stuff, you know, having that melancholy and just something where it makes it feel like all the songs just are telling you something, or they're just tapping into some level that brings out those goosebumps in you. This has that. And to me, it's like that is like an anchor for the heaviness and then the groove rock parts. So you're kind of getting the excitement, but you're just getting this. Because they're often known for being kind of goofy in documentaries, and they have some funny film clips and that, and this is very much, I love it when they can embrace this serious side. So that is my number one.
My number one is Church's Screen Violence, 42 minutes, 10 tracks, Scottish synth pop trio from Glasgow, formed in 2011. This is also their fourth album, but a return to self-production off the back of Love Is Dead, their third album, which was an attempt to kind of hit the mainstream, but didn't hit as well as what they thought. So they've kind of gone back to their synth pop and self-production roots, and boy, have they killed it. Screen Violence was originally conceived as a name for the band. New album was kind of delves into screen violence in three main forms: on screen, by screens, and through screens, with songs addressing feelings of loneliness, disillusionment, fear, among other emotions. Lauren, she discussed it as processed the idea that she could write something escapist almost, but then kind of weave her stories and own feelings into those, but still have personal experiences. Whereas Martin said that, to me, the screen aspect was a little bit more literal. When we were making the record, it was like half our lives were lived through screens. We began as a concept, was now a lifeline. Synth pop perfection, you described it as. And it's kind of hard to go past that. They've released a kind of director's cut of that album more recently with three extra tracks. I think two of those three probably could have made the album. I can understand why they didn't. Kind of, you know, much more tighter package. At 10, it's kind of like a movie with deleted scenes, you know, even though the scenes are good. It probably might have ruined the flow, or...
I mean, we've agreed between us, just like... It's not that people need to have 10 tracks for it to be great, but it just happens to be there's a lot of 10-track albums that are awesome.
Just perfect.
It works.
My standouts, everything is a standout on this album. Go back and listen to the Radio Watson episode where we kind of review it and break it down track by track. But I think one of the kind of sleeper hits for me on this was California, generally because I don't like songs that are called California.
Same here.
Martin from the band was like, everybody who moves to LA does a California song, so we're conscious of not doing that. But no one ever makes songs about the dark side of what happens if you get stuck here and your failure and your entire life almost becomes somewhat meaningless and you have to retreat. I really loved Lauren's delivery of falling in a dream and dying in a dream. Almost sounds whimsical and optimistic despite its meaning in the song. Everyone wants the Californian dream. Well, this is more of an upbeat nightmare. Some really cool guitar strums that open the song that remain all the way through to the verses. But like I said, everything in this song, they did an absolutely awesome deep fake trailer inspired by 80s horror themes. There's a song on here called Final Girl, that's kind of, you know, the horror theme or through line through the album as well. He Said, She Said, kind of featuring Robert Smith from The Cure, which is another banger. Violent Delights, which I think is one of your favorites on there, kind of saying taken from Romeo and Juliet. Good Girls is good. Nightmares is an absolute banger with the repeated lyrics on there. There's nothing on here that is bad at all. Album of the year.
I agree. And this is the funny thing. This is where we sort of said, like, spoiler alert, when we like rated it, you know, you gave it a 10. James, shout out to James, gave it a... Did he give it a 10?
10. Yep.
Did I give it a 9.5? You ruined the Metacritic. I did. I'm sorry.
You did.
But is the thing where it's just like you give something a 10, does that mean it's your very favorite? And it's like, I mean, I gave it a 9.5, and there's some in my top 10 that might be like a 9. Like, I might give Spirit Box a 9. No, let's say like Gojira, I might give that a 9 and not a 9.5. But then it's just, it's so weird how that works. Like, you have like, there's like having a connection to the band, and then obviously like the type of music that resonates with you more. But when I push all that away and just look at it as the piece of work that it is, and the fact that like synth pop is generally like a genre I'm newer to, it was a great experience. And yeah, as I mentioned earlier, with when I was talking about because this being my number 8, the follow-up, man, I feel like I'd rather them like not come back with something for like another 3 years or something, because, well, first of all, to me that's not a long wait in my mind to what I'm used to, but then also because you don't want it to be like more of the same, or like, you know, yes. Screen Violence Part 2.
That's it. You kind of want to go through the tour cycle and then kind of get all this out of your system. And I don't mean that in a bad way. And then kind of sit down, blank slate, start again. You don't want to kind of be making new music while still maybe in like knee deep into this stuff. So,
and there was definitely a lot of artists, like, and a lot of bands that I followed that released albums or were about to promote via touring an album when COVID started. So there are still a lot of albums out there that haven't had their stage time, which is like such a weird thing to think about. So it's like, say for example, you've got this year now seeing Dua Lipa in Perth in November, that's for the album Future Nostalgia. You think about how long ago that would have been released by the time she played.
That was on last year's top 10 albums of the year.
Exactly. It's crazy times, but This was cool. A very strong year for me. I can't wait to see what this year has for us.
It begins all over again, scanning kind of the release date charts and seeing what's coming out, and from artists you recognize or maybe artists you don't recognize, but genres that you kind of do like and are willing to check out, and kind of scrounging the reviews and Pitchfork and the Needle Drop and wherever else you kind of discover music from, all music and that stuff. So... it's going to be fun to kind of hit reset, almost like it is with all the other stuff, games and movies and all the other things that I can consume and enjoy. So,
very cool.
Fantastic. Simon, thanks for coming, and thanks for talking about music, because I love talking to music about you, with you, sorry.
Just specifically music about me. Like, there's like a host of people that have written songs about
me. I love speaking about Simon's music. He's a part of a band. He's a drummer. He's dyslexic, if you don't know. Come on.
No, but like, not even just that. Just like people that specifically, like, there's have written songs about Simon Blackburn. I don't know how many people there. I don't have an
Come
ego.
Come fly with Simon. Fly, fly, fly away. I'll make one. There you go.
Very good.
That's a freebie for all you people.
That was not the greatest song in the world, but that was a tribute.
Yeah. Me and my brother Simon here.
Yep. Very cool.
Where can the lovely people find Take My Tone and all your awesome stuff?
Take My Tone. You can just search in your podcast player. Pretty much any player or service should have it. And yeah, as I mentioned at the top of this episode, this is kind of like kicking off the return. So the Take My Tone feed after this point should be active on a regular basis starting in February 2022. That is this year. That is crazy that it's this year already. And yeah, I can't wait to have Buddy back.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Just to you gotta maintain that record and try out some different formats, and yeah, just see how this thing goes. You know, maybe push into some different mediums as well. So that's where you can find the podcast. If you want to follow me personally on Twitter at PrecisePath.
Yeah, follow Simon over on Twitter at PreciseParth if you want to get involved and you want to go and Take My Tone and you have some cool music and you want to share it along. So definitely reach out to Simon. I'm sure he's looking for guests and loves the kind of diversity of voices to get on there and not just have Buddy on all the time. That'd be fantastic. If you like Radio Watson, you can check it out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, all good podcast services, even the bad ones as well. If you've made it this far, I appreciate you. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Here's to more discussions about more things into the future in 2022 and beyond. You can find the show at Radio Watson _ on Twitter and myself at Buddy Watson 12 on Twitter as well. On Facebook, you can't find me. Okay. Facebook's for my family. Twitter is for my fans. So without further ado, thanks for joining us. I'd love to hear what, reach out. Let me know what your favorite album is of 2021. That'd be pretty cool. I'm sure I'll be over in Twitter being able to discuss that in a thread or something. So it'll be a bit of fun. But until then, until next time, thanks for joining me, Simon. And on behalf of Simon, myself, Buddy Watson, this is Radio Watson. Out. I don't know why I did that. That's dumb. Whatever. See ya.
I was thinking he's like, do I join in on this echo? What's going on?
It's too late.